Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Max Creek Winery, celebrating 20 years of winemaking in Lexington with a commitment to sustainability. Max Creek offers wines, hard cider, craft beer on tap, and patio seating overlooking the vineyards. With weekend hours and curbside delivery, maxcreek.com. Support for programming also comes from Union Bank and Trust, with hardship loans and special considerations to help customers through these uncertain times. The people of UBT are here for Nebraskans and available by phone anytime. Member FDIC. Good morning and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio. Much of today's show is pre-recorded as we continue to protect ourselves and our guests from the spread of COVID-19. I'm Genevieve Randall. Ahead in about 7 minutes, I will be joined by Tom Trenny with Ahmed Music to talk about their presentation of Messiah by Handel. And with the holidays just around the corner, there's a virtual production of A Christmas Carol, and William Padmore will have a profile of a unique artist who carves nativity scenes into a material you might not expect.
Knowledge is light, wisdom is power. And when we were building the Merry Men, you know, we thought we need one more phrase. So the phrase is, art is affirmation.
We'll start our show this week by chatting with Denise Christensen, Executive Director of the Merriman Center in Kearney. The performance space was supposed to host Terrence Simeon, but like many things, they've had to make some adjustments. Denise, I have missed you. Thanks for taking some time to talk with me this week.
We've been, you know, like everyone, just hopeful and planning for the future.
I understand. Well, I want to mention, too, that we have good news to talk about, but let's hold on to that for just a few seconds. Just give us an overview. How have things been for the Merry Men? What have you been going through since March, which is getting to be quite some time ago?
The Merry Men is very unique in that we are located in an active elementary school in Kearney. And this means that when the school shut down, we had to shut down, too. So we had to quickly gather whatever we needed back in March and work remotely, like lots of people. And we weren't able to really get back into our offices until July. And then it was periodically. That in itself presents a challenge for us, but obviously our partnership with the schools is incredible and unique and brings us many opportunities. So we're grateful for that. And as we move forward, it is also creating an issue because the Kearney Public Schools are meeting in person. The kids are here every day in school, but we need to make sure that we are taking great care of them too, so we're unable to produce or present anything on our stage at this time.
But there is some good news, and that is that you're looking forward to the future in which you've got some updates to the Merry Men. You've installed something called the Hearing Loop. How long have you been planning to install that?
This is one of those projects that when you're barely able to catch your breath between performances, that is on a strategic plan that was designated by our board of directors of increasing the accessibility to our performances by all. The Merry Men is very proud of the fact that we were one of the first venues in Kearney to install a hearing loop on the main floor of our theater in 2014. And hearing loop technology supports audience members who have hearing assisted devices. So a little bit different than just people with a hearing loss. So this technology allows persons within the looped space on the main floor of the Merry Men to simply flip a switch on their device, and that might be a hearing aid or a cochlear device. The hearing loop enables the sound to be customized to their hearing loss. So they're able to hear not only the music and the lyrics, but the spoken word very clearly. And so it's very exciting to have offered that. And then now recently, because we've had so many patrons who are grateful and have acknowledged that experience, we actually had patrons who were sitting in the balcony who said, we would like to access that hearing loop too. So then we began an initiative to raise funds to install the hearing loop in the balcony of the theater as well.
The Merriman is just a beautiful space to be in. Looking forward into 2021, in addition to the new hearing loop installation, what are some of your plans for the Merriman going forward, and how far out are you planning right now?
People think we're dark, so do we need to have staff here? What are we doing? Well, we're doing projects like this, and then I don't know if most people realize the planning that goes into a season and performances are anywhere from 12 to 18 months out, sometimes 2 years in the planning, especially when it involves national presenters who are touring across the country and organizing tours, and especially when it is part of the mission of the Merriman to be an engine of creativity for youth. So when we do programming that involves student matinees and involves community partners, we have to plan really far in advance. The students that come to the programming at the Merriman, we have to work with those schools. And often we are having community partners, including the University of Nebraska Kearney and faculty and students from the university, to be involved in that programming. They need to know really far out. And then, of course, we have statewide partners, including the LEAD Center in Lincoln, who is another great partner. And we're working with them right now, planning for programming, hopefully beginning in the fall of 2021 and then into the spring of 2022 and beyond.
I really liked a phrase on a graphic that you sent us. It was a picture from inside the Merriman, and it said on the bottom, art is affirmation. That's so nice to see.
That comes from on our proscenium, which our theater will be 100 years old in 2026. The building itself was built in 1926. And across the proscenium is, knowledge is light, wisdom is power. And when we were building the Merriman, you know, we thought we need one more phrase. So the phrase is, art is affirmation. And people say, well, what does that mean? Well, art is affirmation for the community. We are a place of affirmation that we offer the performing arts to the Kearney area. And then we are also a home for many presenting arts organizations, including the Kearney Concert Association, Crane River Theater, the Kearney Symphony also presents here. So we are doing as many things as we can to prepare this beautiful historic theater for welcoming back audiences.
Denise Christensen is Executive Director of the Merriman Performing Arts Center in Kearney. When new performances come to the space, they've installed hearing loop technology, helping those with hearing loss who have hearing aids or cochlear implants. Denise, it's great to talk with you. Be well.
Thank you so much. It's just a pleasure to be talking to you and to all those people in Nebraska who support the arts.
This is Friday Live, serving your community anywhere that might be. NET Radio is Nebraska's public radio network, online, netnebraska.org. Thanks for listening to Friday Live here on NET Radio. My next guest is Artistic Director with Aubin Music at First Plymouth. Tom Trenny is here to tell us about a virtual community sing to ring in the holiday season. Tom, it's great to see you.
Thank you. It's great to be with you, Genevieve.
Glad to have you in the studio here. Well, let's talk logistics first, because there are those these days. This is the Sunday following Thanksgiving, by the way. How do people see and participate?
Thank you. Yeah, our virtual Messiah Sing is going to be available from our website, which is A-B-E-N-D, Abend, music, M-U-S-I-K.org. You'll also be able to find it from Facebook if you kind of click around a bit from there. And we're hoping that a lot of people will stream in and from the comfort and safety of their homes, participate in singing along. And we're going to have some PDFs of the movements that the audience, the people at home, are invited to sing. And if you don't happen to have your Messiah score handy, you can just, again, click on that on the computer and join in singing. So.
I love the idea of people all across, well, even the world, but also the state, online singing the Hallelujah Chorus. It creates a neat visual in my head, I have to say.
Absolutely.
Now, I wanted to address something your executive director, Trey Lusk, said in the press release, that there are, with that vision in mind, themes of unity and fellowship that are especially meaningful this year. Do you want to talk about that aspect?
Yeah, I think we all realize that, we're so intrinsically connected to one another. Even the things we know we have to do in our communities to take care of one another, they may, in some ways, have more physical distance required between us, but certainly in terms of the spiritual space, we realize how small that is, how much what we do in our lives matters to the others. And so even in terms of making music, it occurs to me that on one level, we'll be all spread out doing this, but in a bigger universal level, we're all doing it together, you know, and that's a wonderful thing to think about, and it gives me some hope through these difficult days.
Now, the online and virtual performances that Auburn Music has been presenting this year have had a partnership each time with another organization, and is that true for this as well?
Yeah, we feel so thankful to, we're partnering with the People's City Mission and what good work they do in our community and how much that mission is essential right now in this difficult moment for so many families. So the virtual Messiah Sing will be consequently and simultaneously a fundraiser for that organization. And we feel blessed at Abend Music to be able to make those kinds of partnerships possible and to offer at least some support and some more awareness for these important organizations. And we hope that the music that people will experience in this online event will, you know, feed their souls to some extent, but that also the event might literally help feed and clothe and support and nurture people who need those less metaphorical, perhaps, and more practical gifts.
Absolutely. Well, Tom, I wanted to ask you about something about the space there at First Plymouth. Even though participants will not be in the space, I think it's worth finding pictures online as well and getting to know this space that has so much meaning for you, that Auburn Music has been a part of for so long. The ceiling of the church there has this beautiful kind of blue with stars on it. And I understand, I think I learned from you, that the arrangement of those stars are intentional, especially around this time of year.
Yeah. When the church was built in the 1930s, they decided to ask some astronomers to help them create the star pattern that would have been in first century Palestine when Jesus was born. And so as you look up, the largest star, of course, is the star of the season. So the stars were, this is kind of a funny part of the story, was that the stars started to fall down. They were back, I don't know if it was in the 60s or 70s, somewhere in there. And so they were gone for a while, but they were restored in a recent renovation. And so now they're put up much more carefully than they originally were.
Falling so. Stars, but not on purpose.
Right. Yeah, but it is a very thoughtful thing and an inspiring thing sometimes when you do choose to look up there to remember that we're part of that, again, that whole wide world, even as we gather in a particular space in a particular time.
Well, Tom Trenny is artistic director for Auburn Music at First Plymouth. Their presentation of Messiah is a community sing on November 29th, and that is online at 4 p.m. on their website. And we will, of course, have a link on the Friday Live page as well. Tom, thank you for being with us on the show this morning.
Thank you, and blessings on the holidays.
To link to more about this Messiah online event or other events you hear about this morning, head to the Friday Live page. That's at netnebraska.org/radio. Stay with Friday Live to learn more about an online presentation of Christmas Carol, and I'll have some highlights from our arts calendar. That's in about 14 minutes. Two state poets before Matt Mason, the state poet was William Clefcorn, longtime professor of English at Nebraska Wesleyan University in Lincoln. Clefcorn recorded a poetry series for NET Radio called Poetry of the Plains until he died in 2011. From that series, he reads three of his unpublished poems from 2011.
I'm going to flip the coin over today, and instead of reading any winter poems, I'm going to read a couple of poems, or at least one, that has to do with spring. I like to think of spring when it's winter, and I don't much like to think of winter when it's spring. In any case, I'm thinking of spring. Maybe you are too. This is called First Robin of the Season, and I dedicate it to Deborah. On the rim of the birdbath, the first robin of the season stands preening. If my daughter-in-law were here to see it, she'd call her father, if he were alive to hear it, to tell him that this year she is a winner, that she saw the first robin of the season before he did, that she has a witness to prove it, that in spite of his being this year's loser, she loves him. Oh, it was a long-standing father-daughter competition, a game intended to keep them alert and connected, something to anticipate and reflect upon, something to test the outer limits of both swagger and humility. And somehow I resist the temptation to call her, to pose as her father, to claim the victory, to attempt a description of the robin, its indescribable orange, its poise as it stands near the water preening, its nest perhaps recently assembled, twigs, grasses, paper, feathers, and to remind her that its melodious song is among the first to declare itself, in spite of the silence of loss, each morning. Switching subjects here a little bit, I'm going to read a poem that doesn't have season attached to it, but it's one that came out of my experience in the hospital a while back. I was not having much fun there. One of my daughters-in-law was there giving me a foot massage, and my wife was holding my hand, and I sound like I'm asking for pity, don't I? Well, I'm not really. I just want you to know how good it feels to have someone holding your hand and someone massaging your feet at the same time. I call this hands. For Deb and Eloise. Hands on the feet at the foot of the bed move slowly, warmly, stoutly. Foot bone connected to the ankle bone, connected to the knee bone, and so on, until the neck bone sends a message to the head bone and you begin to breathe more easily. Hands on the feet at the foot of the bed, moving stoutly, slowly, warmly. Beside you, someone whose hands you'd recognize in any degree of darkness, holding your hand. Wrist bone connected to the arm bone. And though you don't know how this world began, or how it might end, you know the pathway that leads to repose. Hands at the foot of the bed, moving warmly, stoutly, slowly. Hand beside you so familiar, you'd love to say, if you could say it, "Oh, baby, haven't I met you somewhere else before?" And here's a new poem called Always. I was reading Robert Frost, Death of the Hired Man. In that poem, he has a definition of home. I've always rather liked this definition. He says the following: home is the place where, when you have to go there, they have to take you in. Robert Frost, Death of the Hired Man. And I call the poem Always. Always the challenge, however ancient, is a new one. Always the chapter however independent, stands less above than aware of the grand potential of loneliness. Always home is what you carry when everything with weight has been given away or taken from you. And welcome is the word you'll hear when you return, the word that will stay with you always when you're gone.
We heard the late Bill Clefcorn there reading three of his unpublished poems, Always, Hands, and before those two, First Robin of the Season. Friday Live, a streaming event telling the Charles Dickens Christmas tale, A Christmas Carol, thanks to a collaboration between Mid Plains Community College in McCook and the Southwest Nebraska Community Theater Association. It's a virtual event, and it runs tonight, tomorrow at 7 p.m., and then again Sunday at 2 p.m. This virtual Christmas Carol was adapted and is directed by Mark Hardiman, who instructs theater there at MPCC, and joins me by phone. Mark, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Doing good. Thanks so much. I'm so glad to talk to you. I understand that you're relatively new to the position you're currently in there in McCook.
It is. I'm just starting our second year, and it's been quite an adventure this year.
You don't have any idea what normal is in your job there right now.
I'd like to try normal for a while, but yeah, we're up for it.
For the virtual aspect of this Christmas Carol show this weekend, how does it work? Will it be presented on the website or Facebook page? How do people stream it?
The easiest thing to do is to go to mpcc.edu/MCC Theater, and that's on the college website. And there's a link where they can click over to the service we use to sell tickets for it and also present it for it. It's called Show Tickets for You. It's a fantastic thing that sort of puts a frame around what we do, and then we're actually going to be running a Zoom performance through that. People won't be in the Zoom performance other than the cast, but you'll be able to see everybody there and do the show.
We'll make sure that we have links on the Friday Live page as well so that people can link through to more information there. Now, Mark, this is your adaptation of the classic Dickens story. How did you go about creating the adaptation?
I've actually done two live adaptation versions of it, and then when it became clear that we were going to have to go virtual this year just to make sure everybody was safe, I pared it down and really emphasized narrative. So it's really more like a good storytelling with a full cast of wonderful actors performing the roles with just suggestions of costumes. But the idea was to be able to keep it pared down so in about an hour and 25 minutes you can get the entire sense of the show.
The original email we got was from Kevin Cochran, and he said that it's been a lot of fun, and he said it was vaguely surreal as you've been rehearsing this show for a month without anybody actually being in the same room. So put me in the shoes of an actor. How did this work for them?
This is now the second virtual production I have done. And the funny thing is, you know, in the theater we have a tradition of doing like a table read. We'll sit down with the script and read the text together. And those are usually part of our early rehearsals, too. In a way, this is kind of like that on steroids. The actors really get a chance to focus on the script, but also they begin to look at each other in a completely different way. And even though we're virtual, they respond off of each other visually as well. So in a sense, it's like we're all stuck in a room together, but we just can't do staging. So in a way, it emphasizes the acting skills of the actors themselves and really lets us focus on that and the telling of the story.
We all learn the lessons of A Christmas Carol from Scrooge as we go through this tale. Who is your Scrooge this year?
Our Scrooge is a gentleman named Don Harpst. Don has actually been doing the role of Ebenezer Scrooge for years in McCook. In fact, when I first met him in McCook last year sometime, he said, "Hi, I'm Ebenezer Scrooge." Back before two predecessors of the theater program ahead of me actually started doing Christmas Carol and has been doing it with Don. He's been doing it intermittently ever since. When we were going to restage this production, bring this tradition back to McCook, just felt right to use Don. And of course, he's fantastic in the role, having all those years of experience. He's really sort of the ultimate crabby yet lovable Scrooge.
We end up loving Scrooge by the end, at least, right?
There is a transformation that happens to him where he moves from being really greedy to being ultimately generous. And of course, it's such an important message for us to look at even now. And every year I seem to do this production, it always seems more relevant every time we do it. So important messages to really think about others and the life of others on this journey of life as we know it.
I think everybody has probably a favorite part of A Christmas Carol, but personally, one of my favorite parts is when Marley's ghost explains how he wears the chains he forged in life. There's something about that phrase that always sticks with me.
Absolutely. And, you know, we in life basically set the pattern for our lives by the choices we make. And I think that's kind of the lesson that Marley teaches us there. It's always, of course, a challenge to stage that, to put an actor in chains. We do it with just the barest suggestion. He has a blanket draped over him, but with your imagination, you totally see the chains there.
Well, it sounds like a unique and fun production. Ghosts, Scrooge, the Cratchits, Lessons for the Season, all part of A Christmas Carol, which is being presented virtually this weekend by Mid Plains Community College Theater in collaboration with the Southwest Nebraska Community Theater Association. Now, those shows are tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday, and we will have a link to more information on the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. I've been talking about this online streaming show with Mark Hardiman. Mark, thanks so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You're listening to Friday Live, informing and inspiring Nebraska with unique programming. This is NET Radio. The promise of America includes the opportunity for anyone to reinvent themselves. Taking this promise to the limit was James Strang, a mid-19th century con man who plied his trade in fraud far and wide. All About Books host Pat Leach reviewed a lively biography on his remarkable life.
I kept wondering who Strang believed himself to be. Maybe it doesn't matter, but it is intriguing that he was able to present himself as everything from a lawyer to a state senator, to a prophet of the Mormon Church, for at least a while before his story and his actions crumbled back into a mix of petty crime and broken promises.
Learn more about James Strang in The King of Confidence by Miles Harvey. The review is up now at netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. Still to come on Friday Live, we'll check in with some of our arts friends in Scotts Bluff, Kearney, and Lincoln. And in about 9 minutes, we'll hear poetry and a song from Deb Carpenter Nolting of Bushnell, Nebraska. Be sure to check out the arts calendar on our website. There are some online-only or other socially distant events there. Feel free to submit your own arts or humanities event. The address to find events or add your own is netnebraska.org/radio. Just click events. Here are some highlights. The International Quilt Museum is hosting their annual Art Market online this year. Art Market at Home will be online November 16th through the 20th. In Hastings, the Jackson Dinsdale Art Center continues its exhibition, Liminality, Reflections of a Changing Life, with work by Christopher Strickland. And Wayne State College is hosting a recital with music for cello and tuba on Sunday at 2 p.m. For more information about these and other events, visit our website, netnebraska.org/radio.
Support for humanities-related programming on NET comes from Humanities Nebraska, delivering opportunities to engage with history and culture on the web at humanitiesnebraska.org.
Support for programming also comes from History Nebraska, recognizing everyday Nebraskans who do their part to preserve and share Nebraska's stories. The history of Nebraska belongs to the people. To learn more, history.nebraska.gov. This is Friday Live on NET Radio. I'm Genevieve Randall. 86-year-old Archie Silverance lives in Grant, Nebraska, with his wife, Aileen. Since retiring 25 years ago, Mr. Silverance has been working to master the art of carving. Instead of wood, he uses cow horns and deer antlers for his one-of-a-kind sculptures. Friday Live's William Padmore talks with Mr. Silverance about his work.
Archie, how long have you been doing these sculptures?
About 26 years, give or take a little bit. I'd have to look back on my first ones to know for sure, but that's pretty close, 26 years. Sometimes I slough off for a little while, and then I get an idea and take it and run with it. It's a great hobby. It's time-consuming, and you can't think of anything else and do it.
I understand you got the idea to use horns for your sculptures after you saw an eagle fly through a tree and just thought to yourself it would make a good image.
That's what got me started. I've done everything from scrimshaw and on them and just several different things. I really don't know how many I have done, but I've done several. Most of them that I do, I give to fundraisers. I don't sell mine, but I donate them to people that they're having an auction to raise money for somebody with cancer or something.
What type of things do you put on the carvings? I noticed that there were a few, from what I saw, religious sculptures that you did.
Which one did you see?
I saw the one where you did a whole bunch of the life of Christ, I believe it was.
I had been thinking about that for close to a year. I was going to try to do it in wood, and I just couldn't figure out how to do it. And one day I happened to pick up that big cow horn and or steer, whatever it is, and I thought, there it is. I just started in, and I had a heck of a time finding what I wanted to put in there. And finally, I found a kid's learning book about the Bible, and that's where I got most of my ideas to put on there.
How long does a sculpture usually take you to make?
Well, I started it in January, and I just finished it here about a month ago or so. I get to where I shake so bad anymore that once I get them roughed out, sometimes I can't touch them for 2 or 3 days or a week because I shake too bad. And finally, the Lord stepped in and said, we're going to finish it.
Does religion play a big part in all of your artwork, or do you do many different scenes?
Yeah, most of my scenes are like ranch scenes or boating scenes. I've done them with cowboys riding, bucking horses, and two boys were team roping, and fishing scenes, and I guess you name it, I've tried to do it. I've done scrimshaw on some, but that's pretty hard to do because the horns are so grainy, it's hard to draw a straight line on them. If I see a picture or something, that's usually what gets me started on one.
So do you ever take suggestions?
Somebody says something that I like, I would take it and look at it anyway and study it if it was something that I was interested in. If somebody gives me an idea, that'll start me on that subject too. So if somebody's got a good idea, well, I hope they'll tell me.
So for those who haven't seen these pieces of art, the one I saw, it was a horn, and it looked to be hollowed out. And then the sculptures, not etched, but sort of carved out of the surface of the horn. So what types of tools do you use to do this?
Yeah, I use power tools. Like I use several Dremels, and then I have a ram that's a really high speed. We'd buy 3 or 4 Dremel tools. That's what I use for the finishing touches. I'll use the others for the crude outlining, but when I get down to the nitty-gritty, I use that ram and then diamond tip bits or carbide because they're just easier to control. They don't grab or anything.
How many sculptures did you say that you've done so far?
I don't know how how many horns I have done. I'd say probably 15, somewhere around there.
Have you decided what you're going to be working on for your next sculpture?
I got one Midwest gave me, the guy that was managing down there, he gave me a humongous, heavy deer antler, and it had a double fork on the front and on the eye guard. So far, I've got an elk carved, so if you look through that fork, that elk is standing there. I just haven't went any further with it yet. I haven't found what I want, I guess, to go ahead. But when I get it done, I want to have antelope and deer and cougar and mountain lion, probably some bighorn sheep on it.
I've been talking with Archie Silverance about his horn sculptures he's been making for the past 26 years out of his home in Grant, Nebraska. William Padmore, Friday Live.
Heard a question you liked, but then spaced out during the guest's answer? Take a second listen to Friday Live. We podcast the show each week, and you can look for that later this afternoon on our Facebook page or on our website. The address is netnebraska.org. Homestead National Monument near Beatrice presents its annual Winter Festival of Prairie Cultures celebration again.
Our displays are going to represent different countries from around the world and their holiday or winter traditions. There is trees, there's table displays, there's different decorations.
Listen to a conversation with Ranger Amber Kirkendall about this year's celebration on this week's Friday Live Extra. Download wherever you get your podcasts or listen at our website, netnebraska.org/radio. I'm Genevieve Randall. This is Friday Live here on listener-supported NET Radio. Nebraskan Deb Carpenter-Nolting expresses herself in a number of ways. She is an author, poet, storyteller, songwriter, performance artist, and teacher. Here she is reading one of her poems and singing one of her songs.
This poem is my most recent. I wrote it from a prompt during a virtual workshop through TEDx Mile High. Jovan Mays, an internationally renowned spoken word poet who works with students in the Denver schools, led this workshop. He asked us to write down our concerns, both personal and collective. Then we took points of concern from that list and turned them into statements of resolution. I thought it was a really powerful exercise, and I called the poem When. When we find ourselves in the state of the ununited states, we will stretch our fingers and hearts as far as they reach and span the divide to offer grapes. When we can no longer afford health coverage, we will doctor our own souls and detoxify our bodies and film YouTube videos on how to stay alive. When women's rights are reversed, we will rejoin the world's goddesses and stir the skies to storms. We will reclaim our power to heal the earth. When they come to rip our children and grandchildren from their homes, we will stand shoulder to shoulder, creating a wall that will protect our vulnerable loved ones. And when they cut out my voice box and burn my writings, their acts will be futile because my words are powerful and they are etched in the minds of those who hear them. I wrote this song several years ago, but I think it still echoes today. The piece was inspired by a visit to a little cemetery up in the hills in northwestern Nebraska. Most of the graves are in the open, but this little grave is fenced off. And the headstone inside says, "Billy Boy, all of our hopes lie buried here." He died of the Spanish flu, which at the time I saw the headstone didn't really sink in. But living during a pandemic, you begin to see the direct and the indirect toll that pandemics take on individual lives and families. I titled a song after that little guy, and it's called Billy Boy.
Deb Carpenter-Nolting performing her song Billy Boy. Before that, we heard her read her poem When. Deb lives in Bushnell with her husband Tim, who is also a poet. They are blessed with a blended family, live in a renovated horse barn, and share a dog, two cats, a miniature horse, 22 hens, and a rooster. Some quick check-ins with folks around the state and see how things are going, starting with Billy Estes, Executive Director for the Historic Midwest Theater in Scotts Bluff and the Skyview Drive-In. Hi, Billy. How are you?
Hey, Jen. I'm doing well here.
Good. So still no shows in the theater, but I hear that the drive-in actually had to shut down shows, too. What happened?
Oh, we had a little bit of wind that we get out here in western Nebraska last weekend. On Saturday morning, we had a 70-mile-an-hour gust that was clocked at the location that took a couple of sections of our screen out, but we are will be back up tonight and with a slightly smaller screen for a couple of weeks possibly while we get some new metal rolled, and then we'll be back up and fully going hopefully by the second week of December.
I know you just announced some of those holiday movies once you get those repairs made. Do you want to give us a tour of what's on the docket?
We're taking our holiday movie magic series to the drive-in, because what else can you do during a pandemic but go to the movies at the drive-in? So we're going to be presenting 11 free classic holiday favorites over the course of December, everything from Polar Express to How the Dr. Seuss Stole Christmas to Christmas Vacation, and, you know, one of my personal favorites, A Christmas Story, and we can't say our favorite line on the radio, but you can come to the movie and experience it for yourself.
When people come to the Skyview Drive-In, I see there's parking for up to 165 cars. That's quite a bit of room, actually, for people to come and enjoy that Christmas series.
We have a lot of space out there. We've never quite filled it over the course of the summer, so I know that through Christmas time, you know, if families are concerned about social distancing, there's plenty of space out there. We've made accommodations to be able to get contactless concessions ordered. We got to have some fun and have some holiday cheer, and what a better way to do it than a Christmas movie. Because we're at the drive-in and outdoors, we're also doing some Christmas light decorations. I don't know that it will be quite the standard of the Griswolds, but it will be pretty out there.
Since the weather is getting cold, limits on bathroom facilities.
Yeah, we just have decided to limit the bathrooms. It's still there, but, you know, it's not heated, so it's a cold seat. And we just encourage people to use the restroom before they come out. But, you know, it is there available for those emergencies, and that shouldn't be a deterrent from not coming to the movie.
Billy, glad that you keep rolling with the punches there despite 70-mile-per-hour winds.
No, nothing will stop the movies. We'll just keep on doing it.
Next, we'll chat with Lauren Durbin from the Lead Center for Performing Arts. They've announced recently that events will move to online only. Hey, Lauren.
Hello, how are you, Genevieve?
I'm doing okay, considering.
Yes, exactly.
So I wanted to check in with you. The Lead was one of the first to find ways to hold some in-person events. What prompted the move to online only again?
Well, we have heard the messages from our health and safety professionals and the medical community, and we really want to be doing what's right. We are operating within the current DHMs. We can easily have fewer than 500 people in the building, but at least through the end of November, which is the determination we've made at this point, we've decided that not having audiences in the building and doing all of our events virtually was the right way to go. And also, we have a lot more capabilities to do that than we did in the beginning of the pandemic. We've learned a lot about how you present arts online. And also, thanks to a private grant, we have a 5-camera broadcast quality video system now installed in the Lead Center. So the quality of what we can share with our audiences is a lot better than it was 8 months ago.
What events does this affect in particular?
This affected mostly the events that happened this week. Tuesday and Wednesday evenings, we had our Mosaic Film Festival featuring two different films, one about standing there and another about following the story of a migrant farm worker, both documentaries co-directed by Ingrid Holmquist, who is a UNL alum and Nebraska native. And those were both, the films were streamed live and then followed by panel discussions. And then Thursday evening, we had our Lead Live Online, which would have been the first time we could have had in-person audiences for a Lead Live Online, but that will wait, which was a concert in tribute to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a really interesting piece, only the second time it was performed anywhere, pieces of work by female composers that were all commissioned by Justice Ginsburg's children in recognition of her 80th birthday. And so that was Thursday night. And so now we are kind of on hold. We will make determinations about December as we move a little forward. As you know, through all of this, flexibility has kind of been the name of the game. And we're figuring this out as we go along.
Lauren, you've been in communications there at the Lead for a while, and even before that in a number of ways. But I'm wondering, do you get communications as such back from audience about their experiences with being able to experience shows and performances, no matter what form they're taking, either in person or online?
I would say the overriding thing that we've heard is that the arts are so important, maybe more important than even usual in this time. There's so much hope and joy and normalcy in being able to enjoy music and dance and all the other forms of the arts, both in person and online. We've had really good feedback from the people that have been able to join us in person with our socially distanced seating and much smaller audiences. The one thing that I love to hear is as soon as the program starts, you forget you're wearing a mask, right? You get to be somewhere else for 90 minutes or so. And people have said they felt very safe with the much smaller audiences and mask wearing. I've had a couple people tell me that it felt safer than the grocery store. But also online, people have been thankful to get to experience the arts again. We miss it so much. It's amazing how once you don't have live performance in your life for just a little bit, you realize how important it is to you. I know that's certainly the case for me personally.
To stay up to date with any changes, we will have a link to the LEAD Center's website on the Friday Live page. Lauren, thanks so much. Great to talk with you.
Thank you so much, Genevieve. Be well.
Now we'll check in with Hastings College and their music program, as well as other arts programs. Louis Eckhart is assistant professor of music and director of bands and chair of the Department of Music and Theater. Louis, how are things in Hastings?
Well, you know, we are hanging in there, and I said earlier that it's like the Jeff Goldblum line from Jurassic Park, the arts find a way. Our music program has been very active. We had a band concert last week, and we performed in a hall for no audience, socially distanced. We had the band out in the hall itself and the percussion on stage and did a couple interesting staging things and then live streamed that concert. We had a choir concert that was recorded over 2 days and then sort of premiered it on Facebook and YouTube at the same time. And right now we're setting up to record our Christmas concert, which is going to include our handbell ensemble, our choir, and band. We're recording them all at different times, and then we're going to stitch them together and broadcast that out. Our theater program is doing a monthly live TV-style variety show, and they have hosts, discussions, and they're airing pre-recorded videos along with live stuff. And the second show is this coming Sunday night. And then our visual art program is really cooking as well. We've had 3 exhibitions this fall, and the gallery is open on weekdays only, but with reduced capacity and masks required. But we are still putting the arts out there for the people of Central Nebraska.
When people access those online performances, for example, the upcoming Christmas concert or that next episode from the theater department, how do people access those?
Our favorite way to send this stuff out is via Facebook Live. And we like it because then folks can kind of interact with things. The last theater show, they had people that were asking questions and participating on the Facebook Live feed, and then they would react to that on the show. So that was kind of fun. You can find those by going to Facebook.com/Hastings College Music, and all one word, and then Facebook.com/Hastings College Theater.
Louis Eckhart is assistant professor of music at Hastings College and trumpet player extraordinaire, as well as, I believe, frequent requester on Friday afternoon's Classics by Request.
Yeah, don't tell anybody this, but I actually have timed my emails to go out over the next few months.
When I heard Louis in Hastings, I knew it was you. Well, Louis, thanks for telling us about everything going on at Hastings College there. I hope you're well.
Thank you, Genevieve. You too. And I just want to tell everybody in Nebraska that the arts are struggling right now. And so any extra patronage you can do is helpful to everybody. And everyone's working real hard to keep producing. And hopefully we can, you know, and I know that we'll all survive this thing and move on into the next era.
How well does culture stand up for nature? Amplify Arts Alternate Currents Working Group hosts a panel discussion about this topic in Omaha. Next year on Friday Live, KVNO's Corbin Hirschhorn has more.
Amplify Arts currently has an exhibition open as well as new content available on their website. Alternate Currents is a blog, conversation series, and artist working group. Program Director Peter Fankhauser.
Or how we're thinking about this program. It's a way to sort of contextualize national and international issues in the arts a little closer to home. So the program does that in a couple of different ways, both on and offline. The first is a blog at amplifyarts.org/alternatecurrents. The second is a discussion series, and the panel coming up tomorrow is part of that discussion series. And you know, in those discussions, folks are picking up on a lot of the issues and ideas that are addressed in blog posts and sort of expanding them.
The latest Alternate Currents panel discussion, which will be available on Amplify Arts' website, is all about environmental justice.
So we've been focusing, in 2020, we've dedicated the entire year to focusing on issues around environmental justice and ecological justice. And the 10 artists who participated in our Alternate Currents working group this year spent the entire year that we were together developing project-based work in response to issues similar issues. So the group kind of collectively determined that they kind of collectively identified water as sort of this broad issue around which everybody's ideas kind of converged and coalesced. And so this discussion that we're having, panel discussion, working group artists will be discussing their projects and their collaborative work in relationship to water as a kind of precursor for an exhibition that'll open in December at our generator space on Vinton Street, in which those projects will be on view.
Also going on now, exhibition Hostile Terrain 94 Nebraska.
And that's a partnership with OIAS and the School of Integrative and Global Studies at University of Nebraska-Lincoln. And it's essentially a big quilt that an assistant curator at the International Quilt Center in Lincoln constructed and is using as kind of a backdrop for a map of the U.S.-Mexico border. And on that map are geolocated about 3,200 toe tags that were handwritten by volunteers and inscribed with the names of people who died crossing the border.
For more information on Amplify Arts Alternate Currents or current exhibition, Hostile Terrain 94 Nebraska, visit amplifyarts.org. For Friday Live, I'm Corbin Hirshhorn.
Coming up this morning on NET Radio, classical music on Morning Concert, and this afternoon, Bruce Wallace is in for Laura Black on Classics by Request. Also, we'll carry the governor's coronavirus address. That's at 1:30 Central. Be sure to visit the NET website for podcasts of the show. That's at netnebraska.org/radio. Portions of Friday Live are pre-recorded. Our theme music was written and performed by Alexios Anist. Thanks to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Carrie Meese, William Padmore, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall. Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Cornerstone Bank, a family-owned bank providing custom investments, trust, and estate planning services since 1882, with 43 central Nebraska locations. CornerstoneConnect.com. Cornerstone Bank, building trust on a solid foundation. Support for programming also comes from Lincoln Calling, presenting keynote speaker Anna Maria Archilla on love, imagination, community engagement. The keynote can be found on Lincoln Calling's YouTube channel. Lincoln Calling is a nonprofit organization supporting music, art, and education in Nebraska. To learn more, LincolnCalling.com.